I'm Paul Vanvis, the host of this new podcast from Ali at American University that we're calling Curiosity Never Retires. It's a look ahead, a preview of some of the exciting classes that we'll be offering this coming fall. If you're not familiar with Ali at American University, we're one of several Ali's around the country, all of them sharing a single purpose: to provide high-quality, interesting courses on a range of topics so varied that the word broad doesn't begin to describe it. History, politics, languages, music, medicine, philosophy, these are just some of the areas explored in Ali at American University courses. We're a nonprofit membership organization located on Upper Massachusetts Avenue in DC. Our study group leaders are all volunteers with years of training, experience, and a profound interest in the topics they teach. And because there are so many options, we wanted to help you choose by giving you an idea of what some of the courses are about. We're starting by talking to David Flaxman, who is teaching a course on Mozart. David's taught several classes on classical composers for Ali at American University. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Paul. I'm delighted to be here to help you kick off this podcast series.
Well, we're glad you're here. I think even people who don't know a lot about classical music have heard the term the three B's: Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. These are supposed to have been the greats. Where's Mozart's place in this pantheon of composers?
Well, that's a great question and a good way, I think, to start this discussion. The three B's is a meme that's been around for probably a century. But for my money, Mozart really belongs in the pantheon of greatest composers. I would displace Brahms and replace him with Mozart. I love Brahms, but for my money, it's really Bach, Beethoven, and Mozart as the three greatest composers of all time.
When you say that, what kind of metrics are you using when you make those judgments?
Well, you know, in the world of Western classical music, there are numerous genres of compositions that composers have worked in. The most important of these are symphonies, opera, choral music, piano music, concertos for piano and other instruments like violin, chamber music like string quartets and piano quintets, and of course, songs. Unlike almost any other composer, Mozart has some of the greatest compositions in just about every one of these genres, with the possible exception of songs, unless you want to consider pulling arias out of his operas and thinking of them as songs. And in fact, many great performers will just perform arias as though they were songs. But in all these genres, he has some of the greatest compositions ever created.
Hmm. Give us an example of just one of his compositions you think particularly shows his genius.
Well, I think we could start by talking about his final symphony, his symphony number 41, often called the Jupiter Symphony. It's incredibly lyrical. Mozart had a tremendous gift for lyricism, but it also was something that he wrote in a time where he had been diving into the music of Bach and really studying Bach's approach to writing fugues. And one of the things I'm going to play for you a little piece from this, from the final movement of Jupiter, in which Mozart finishes this amazing symphony with the most complicated and yet beautiful and profound fugues ever written by any composer. And just listen to this. It's amazing to realize that Mozart died, of course, at age 35, and to wonder what he might have written had he lived longer. For example, Mozart, now that he was studying Bach, might have written his own version of the Well-Tempered Clavier to show off his ability to write fugues. He was that kind of guy. Once he was mastering something, he wanted to show it off to his audience.
So a lot of people think they know the story of Mozart's life from the Milos Forman film Amadeus. How accurate was that movie, and how did it affect Mozart's reputation?
Well, first of all, we're thankful to Milos Forman for Amadeus. It's an amazing movie, one of my favorite movies of all time. That having been said, it is a bit of a caricature of Mozart. Mozart was a bit of a scamp and a practical joker, which I think, is not something that's surprising given how he was paraded in front of royalty and all manner of important people as a child. But Forman shows him as really pretty a vulgar person and somebody who was a womanizer. And I think we now know, particularly if you take a look at the biography written recently by Jan Swofford. In fact, Mozart, from everything we can tell, was absolutely devoted to his wife, Constanze. So I think that Amadeus does a great job of presenting some of the music of Mozart and telling a lot of his life story, but it's an exaggeration in many ways.
One of the things that I was thinking about his life is he started, of course, very young. His genius was apparent very soon. And his father still played a very important role in his son's career, didn't he? He made a number of decisions about what Mozart needed to do to advance his career.
I would say there were two important people in Mozart's life that led to his development early on as a musician and as a composer. One obviously was his father, Leopold. The other was his older sister, Nannerl. She was also a brilliant musician. In fact, I think there is a movie or a series that has just come out which imagines that in fact she was the greater composer and wrote some of the music that he later presented. I mean, this is sort of modeled on the story of Felix Mendelssohn and Fanny Mendelssohn. But she was a brilliant musician, and when Leopold first started touring with the two of them, they would both perform for royalty and perform together. And the story goes that she was at the piano practicing. She was, I'm going to say 10, and Wolfgang was maybe 5. And he gets up and sits at the piano and starts imitating what she was doing and could immediately play the piano beyond what anybody could imagine somebody at that age could play. So the two of them were very important for the development of Wolfgang as a brilliant young musician and composer.
You said it was surprising to think of him as a scamp because of all of the people that he interacted with at the highest levels of European society. There's an anecdote about him playing the Allegri Miserere. Tell us that
Yeah,
story.
so the Pope, I think it was Clement the 14th, had decided that this Allegri Miserere was the most beautiful and sacred of works, and it was his favorite work. And he decreed that it was only to be performed inside the Vatican. Nobody could take it outside the Vatican. Mozart and Leopold went to hear it, and the story is that upon hearing it once, Wolfgang was able to transcribe it perfectly and then would show up at parties around Rome and sing parts of it. So I think this is an exaggeration. There is no question that he had an amazing capacity to remember large amounts of music. The image of Mozart sitting at a desk and just writing music as though God were dictating it to him, comes about because, in fact, he wrote very fast, as though he had everything in his mind and could write it down. And so it's not implausible that he might have, upon one or two hearings, have been able to transcribe most of this piece. But I think, again, it's a slight exaggeration. He died young, and he left his beautiful widow Constanze with a fair number of debts. And she was a pretty crafty businesswoman, and she constructed this legend of her husband that included stories like this that helped her promote his music and helped her maintain a bit of a lifestyle after he passed.
Wow, that's a wonderful story. It sounds like a fascinating course. Let's talk a little bit about the format of the course. You're going to teach it in person as well as online,
Yes.
and people who are interested can take it either way or both, right?
That's right. So back when the pandemic hit, I was teaching a class on Brahms, as it happens, And we switched within a week, we switched from in-person to fully on Zoom. During that time, my father, who was 95 at the time, started taking my class online. When we came back to in-person, I decided that I really needed to keep doing it online as well as in-person so I could continue to have my father attend the class. We also, you know, would have hundreds of people online. So I thought this would broaden the audience. So I've been teaching it hybrid ever since. We'll tend to have 100 people in the classroom in room A, and then we might have 100 or a couple hundred people online. It's a challenging format. It's not for everybody. I think right now there's only a couple of us who do it at Ali at American. And I think what makes it possible for me to do it is, one, I have a lot of high quality video clips that play well on the big screen in room A, but also play well on the internet. And also, I've trained myself to sit in front of my computer and the mic to present the course. I used to love to walk around and gesticulate while I was teaching, but in order to make hybrid work, you really need to sit in front of the computer and the microphone. And then the final part is, it's not a highly interactive with the students class, because that can be frustrating, particularly to people online, if there's a lot of questions and discussion in the room. So I am very structured about taking a few questions and then, you know, answering them, repeating the question. And then at the end of the class, I'll maybe take a few more questions. I always repeat the questions so people can hear them online. If somebody says something interesting in the room, I'll repeat it, you know, online. So it has worked really well.
That's wonderful. It's, you know, and it really shows the advantage of having people teach courses that they not only know the substance of, but have taught so many times that they know how to get it across to students. So it all sounds fascinating. I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to take it this fall. Good luck. Thanks again for coming in, and can't wait to hear it.
Thanks, Paul, and good luck with the series.
Curiosity Never Retires is a podcast produced by Ali at American University. Our engineer for this episode was Jesse Williams, and Andrew Hiller lent a hand in the editing. Thanks again to our guest, David Flaxman, for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate it, share it, and send us comments. We'd love to hear from you. And for Curiosity Never Retires, I'm Paul Vanvis.